Blog Talk Radio.
Your Mother's Medicine Cabinet, brought to you by those folks at the Literary Underground. Okay, so that was Tom Waits, Tango Till They're Sore. Anyways, so just a reminder that the show we missed out last week with Make to Eat will be this Thursday, makeup date. Look for the links. So tonight, our guest is, as you know her on Facebook, Aurora Kill Poet, but she actually has a name. And we're going to bring her on now and have her tell you all that stuff, Kat. Hello.
Hi, Frank.
How are you doing?
I'm good.
How's life in the Bay Area this evening?
This evening it's nice and cool and everybody's getting ready for tomorrow. Everywhere, I suppose.
But not you.
No, especially me. I need to be up at the polls at 6 a.m. to set up. They call us poll workers, which I think is hilarious. I will be.
Did you say
the
poll?
Yeah,
the poll.
I will be.
What do you do as a poll worker?
Oh, Frank, I think you know what I do as a poll worker. I will be there at 6 a.m. to set up the booths. And apparently where I'm going, no one speaks Spanish, so that's what I'm there for. I will be representing the president in Spanish all day long.
Wow. So what will you say to somebody that does not speak English that wants to know about the president? How will you say it? I've never heard you speak Spanish.
I'm hoping that they already know basically what they want to do, so I'll just remind them as they walk up, Obama, you know, something like that. Actually, I'm not supposed to really explain anything to them other than how to use the equipment. That were any paraphernalia, no buttons, no nothing, so I'm wearing a George Washington wig.
sweet. So you're like going over the top. No knickers?
Always.
Will you be wearing buckled shoes?
I will be wearing stilettos and a powder
wig.
Oh,
okay.
Yes.
Nice.
This has worked for some time.
Right on. So, would you like to start with anything? And then we'll just go from there. Would anything that you're in your choosing?
Anything of my choosing?
Yes.
Yeah, you know,
we were discussing this morning, and I don't ever really ask for anybody to read anything specific, so.
All right. Well, what I was thinking about was there's this poem that I didn't write. It's a Bukowski poem, and it's probably the first poem, serious poem that I ever read, you know, outside of a nursery rhyme. I was like 16. And it kind of set the tone for the rest of my life. So I figure if we're talking about me and poetry, that's probably the best place to start.
Okay.
So if that's all right with you, then I'll read you a Bukowski.
That works for me.
All right. It's called The Three Oranges. He says, first time my father overheard me listening to a bit of music, he asked me, what is it? It's called Love for Three Oranges, I informed him. Boy, he said, that's getting it cheap. He meant sex. Listening to it, I always imagined three oranges sitting there. You know how orange they can get. So, mightily orange. Maybe, what's his name? Prokofiev? I've only ever seen it read. Had meant what my father thought. If so, I preferred the other way. The most horrible thing I could think of was part of me being what ejaculated out of the end of his stupid penis. I will never forgive him for that. His trick that I am stuck with, I find no nobility in parenthood. I say, kill the father before he makes more, such as I.
So, when you being, if you could put yourself in this 16-year-old cat mind, how did that go about setting the tone? We don't need to discuss Bukowski per se, but what poem, how did that poem influence you into setting the tone for you or whatever?
Well, I think you need to understand a little bit about how I was raised. I was raised in a really sheltered religious house where they only spoke Spanish. Nothing was ever really discussed, nothing was ever really talked about, and so, you know, the only method for survival, if you're an honest person, I was just explaining to someone the other day, is, you know, to try to express yourself as best you can without getting the shit beat out of you. And when I read this poem, there were a few things that struck me about it. First of all, that someone could be innocent and have nothing wrong with what they're doing and yet still be perceived by someone who is seeing the world as they are, not, you know, as it is, as they could perceive you to be completely differently. And that was something that I'd always felt. And I guess secondly, the thing was, for living such a sheltered existence, the subject matter of his poetry didn't offend me. And I guess I'd never really read anything like that before, so I always expected to kind of be shocked when I read something, you know, oh my God, he said the word penis. It really didn't affect me the way that I thought it would.
Uh-huh.
I had a similar experience a couple years ago. A friend of mine is a mortician, and I went with her to work one day, and we worked on this body. This girl had gotten hit by a bus, and I expected to have a very, like, a strong visceral reaction to this body that was in front of me, and I didn't. You learn things about yourself. You never know until you're in the situation. And so this was one of those moments where I expected to have a reaction that I didn't have, other than being offended or finding something wrong with it. I just really felt like there was a group of people that got me and got this, and that my experience was not unique, even though I didn't really know anyone else that was having the same experience as I was.
Well said. And like, knowing you the way that I think I must have known you for 6 or 7 years via the internet all the way back to MySpace, and I think this last summer was the first time that that I have met you in person in San Francisco, and I would have to say that meeting, have you always been like, you're very like open kind of person, like kind and opened and for it all in a good way. But like I understand, I don't know if it's the same kind of existence I lived. I grew up in a very Catholic family, I should say. And when I meet people who are also sheltered, like I'm so surprised that they're so easily open and in tune into things when it was such a struggle for myself. Is this just something that like you're always that way now, always been that way?
I think I've kind of always been that way. I mean, believe it or not, I'm actually a pretty shy person.
Mm-hmm.
But I find that when you have those kinds of experiences when you're young, you kind of go one of two ways when you get older. You try to take the best from it and move on and not be that way, or you spend the rest of your life trying to understand what the fuck happened to you. And I think that I'm a little bit of both. You know, I go back and forth, but it's not that I don't see a value in having structure as a child and as a young person, and I do appreciate that aspect of my childhood. Of course, it just was kind of batshit crazy after a while, but I've tried to take the good parts of that and not hold it against the rest of the world.
Cool.
Use it to modify my perspective in a positive way.
So I would like to switch it a little bit, because earlier we were talking online this morning about the show, and you had mentioned Billy and how you wanted to read some of his,
and
I just wanted to kind of mention that, like, I never knew the guy personally, other than via like the phone and the internet, because I had not made my way to California yet. And I wanted to say that, like, when I was going through a lot of stuff, I'm like around 07, around there, 06, 07, and a while back, and I was just like really just thinking about, you know, putting a backpack on my back and walking and thumbing to California. He was the first guy to say, dude, just sleep on my couch, get your shit together and sleep on my couch, I don't even know you. And then we had like this like friendship in a way that wasn't like some of you guys in California knew him. But he was very somebody I could never easily forget, though I never met him. And I was kind of happy this morning when you said that you wanted to read something by him. So, I mean, if you would want to do that now or later, it's fine.
Sure. No, that's the funny thing about Billy is that everybody that met him or had any interaction with him always has a similar remark, which is, I think I knew him differently than other people knew him. Everybody felt he had a way of making you feel that the way that you got to know him and the interactions he had with you were different. Because they were. And it wasn't that he had multiple personalities. It was just that the man was well-balanced and he was well-rounded for a large part of his life. And so he could relate to people, and he was open about specific parts of himself with specific people. And that was part of the beauty of him and part of the tragedy of him no longer being with us.
Well, I'd like to ask go ahead.
Oh, go ahead, man. Go ahead.
No, I was going to ask, now, the lineage of Kill Poet started, and I never know, I talk to the guy all the time, and I never know if I say his name right, but it started with Alvarez, correct, and then was passed down to Billy and Jason, and then wherever it is now, it's with you and Jason, correct? Am I correct in saying that?
Yeah, no, you're correct. I mean, it's passed through a few hands. It was Alvarez's first, he's daddy. And then
okay.
Dylan McTurk and Brad Burton had it for a while, Foxy.
Yeah.
Dino. And then
okay.
I think Alvarez had it again for a while, and then it went to Billy and Jason. And then when Billy passed, Jason asked me to join in with him, which I was honored to do because I'd felt like I'd been a part of Kill Poet for a long time, so now it's me and Jason struggling to keep it up just like every other press, you know, while we try to live our normal lives as well.
That was the first press I think I ever knew, and I think the very first poem that I think I ever published via an online press was, because I didn't know anybody in the publishing world till I met Alvarez on MySpace years ago. And I think Billy published one. It was such a bad poem, but like, and he published it so long ago, and he liked it, and that's how I got to know the Kill Poet. And I sometimes, whenever I see Jason at readings and stuff, he's always like trying to sell some kind of sticker from Kill Poet, and I don't know whatever happened to you guys, but whatever. You can read that Billy poem. You can read that
I'm
Billy
sorry
poem.
He tried to sell them to you, Frank. I will send you one. you know, it's funny that you say that, though, because Kill Poet was the first press to publish me, too. It always makes me happy to talk to people, and they're like, and people that you know, I still enjoy their work, and I still respect what they do, and they're like, yeah, Kill Poet was the first to give me a shot. That makes me happy. That's what we're all about. But,
yeah,
my first real tattoo was for my Kill Poet publishing. So, yeah, mad love for them, independent of being a part of it now, just having been a part of it in that way back then was a big deal for me.
Oh, it was definitely a big deal getting that first, like, poem published. And, like, I've done it, like, so many times via the print and whatever method I'm doing it. I've done it so many times by now, but I'll always remember that first poem, whether, you know, it didn't matter if it was on the internet or in print. I was like, holy shit, someone's wanting to publish some piece of shit that I just wrote. Amazing. Like, you know, it was such a good feeling. You know, at the time, like, maybe it was cool.
If you wanted
cool,
it Frank, then it wasn't a piece of shit.
Well, yeah, I know. I'm not saying you guys publish pieces of shit, but I'm just saying, like, at all. You guys published amazing stuff. I'm just, like, saying, like, back then, like, I'll always remember it as an awesome thing, which always connects my memory to Billy, which is my segue into you reading a Billy poem.
All right, mass recovery. We'll do it. So this is a bit of a short story with a poem in the middle of it that he wrote, and it's my favorite Billy piece, and I read it at a read we did at Beyond Baroque shortly after he passed, and I will read it every chance I get till the day I die, because I think it's genius, and it's one of those things, the more you think about it, the more sense it makes. It's called Organ Donor, and here it goes. I'm going to work to get through it because I get a little choked up towards the end, so we're going to try.
Okay.
All right. Organ donor. He'd had enough. Quietly and deliberately, he loaded his Smith & Wesson 38 caliber revolver with 6 hollow point bullets, yet knowing quite well only one would be used. The gun was a gift, and prior to this night had never been fired. He set the loaded pistol on the dresser, muzzle facing away from him just as he was taught, and stared blindly into a mirror. He said to himself quietly, "It's out of my hands now." He went into his bathroom, retrieved a razor from his medicine cabinet, and returned to the mirror. Through a drunken blur, he placed the razor on his chest and started to carve 2 words, 10 letters. His hands had never been so steady, his thoughts never so clear. With each letter carved with certain care, he felt closer to redemption. As blood streamed down from his split tissue, it dripped down from his pecs into his navel. He knew it would soon be over. He took a drink of Jack Daniel's straight from the bottle. Patiently waiting for the cab he had called minutes before, he washed his chest with some of the whiskey. His destination, St. Paul's Mercy Hospital. He searched through his apartment for cab fare and an article of identification he could take with him. A photo ID or driver's license was unacceptable. He needed something else. Finding an old business card in his wallet, he scribbled 2 phone numbers on the back. He knew them by heart. The cab arrived. My words rock me. Like embalming fluid filling living tissue, I am drowning in vague images of a single night that has lasted a lifetime. I cannot even remember the last time I kissed a girl. This isn't about a girl. I have carved so deep inside my vital organs, I am now only paper mache. If I believed in God, I would be a priest. This is how detached I have become. It is no longer a struggle to fix the broken or write anew. It is now just a waiting room. So here I sit, watching myself in the waiting room. As he walked to the ER's waiting room, the sliding glass door did not open fast enough, and he caught his reflection one last time. He cringed from the sight. Standing at the front desk, he quietly waited for his turn. It was 12:30 a.m. The waiting room was full. He observed a middle-aged man who had fallen in his bathroom. A man held an ice pack to his head. An older man with his wife waited by the TV. Both wore matching robes and kept wiping their noses with their sleeves. there was a young boy with his mother, obviously fever-ridden and irritable. She read him the Velveteen Rabbit. A young man in his 20s waited in front of him at the desk, and he held an old T-shirt to his forehead. Stitches would be required to sew up a small gash above his right eyebrow, probably from a fistfight. All this sickness, all this corrosion of body squeezed into a sterile white room with blue chairs, yellow benches, and metallic tables covered with two-year-old magazines. On the walls were framed pictures of flowers and families and seascapes showing promise of a better life. Yet like cattle in line before the slaughter, these ill people waited patiently for a cure that does not exist in a place where no one talks. In this waiting room, people waited for their faith to stop the pain, to stop the bleeding. There was an old rerun of Happy Days on TV. Nobody watched. It was his turn at the desk, the nurse, a heavyset woman, about 30, thinking of black coffee and cherry cough syrup, impatiently asked, "Name and chief complaint?" She didn't bother to look up. Pausing a moment, he quietly stated, "Apathy." The nurse looked up just in time to see him put the loaded revolver to his left temple and pull the trigger. Pieces of his brain quietly landed in her coffee mug. As the echo of the gunshot drilled through the quiet waiting room, Fozzie's patented "A" came spilling over from the TV. A trace of smoke could be seen from the exit wound, and his eyes remained open.
Oh.
God damn, Billy.
Yeah, man. That's, like, beautiful and rough at the same time. I don't, like, really know what to say about that. So, yeah, I'm going to leave it at that, yeah, and be a little stunned. Is that okay?
That is absolutely how you should feel, dude.
So, I'm going, before we go into the cat part of the show, we have a caller that would like to speak to you, and I don't know who it is.
Oh, my.
So... You're on air.
Ill Kill, AK. That was amazing. That was, that poem had the whole feel of, I'm glad you mentioned the lines about talking, about walking to the ER waiting room, because I feel like, you know, with your entire body of work, from what I've read, it's got this whole, like, sort of corrosion of body, like, corrosion of heart theme to it. And especially in that piece right there, it was like this, like, corrosive vacancy, like I found in the narrative and the delivery. It's like a tinge, like battery acid, you know, like on your tongue and stuff. So it is beautiful.
Yeah, you know, Billy, he injected humor into so much of his work sometimes that you forgot that. And so much of his poetry was also, you know, it was heartbreak poetry.
Yeah.
And then you read something like this and you realize how he bled in so many colors. This went so far beyond, and his talent, the poetry, it's a different kind of, it's a different part of your brain that it uses. It's shorter, it's more concise. Shitty writers can fake it real good in poetry, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But something of this length, Billy couldn't hide that he was amazing.
Yeah, that was fucking dope. I love the whole Velveteen Rabbit like inclusion there. It's like a. Like real surgical almost, you know, and it was like that whole like, yeah, distance between like, I don't know, it was like a whole distance between like a morose scene and like this whole like warm feeling that you get from just from the title of the book. I don't know, I've read The Velveteen Rabbit and, you know, just it's that whole distance between it, like trapped in the ER waiting room. I dug that. That was awesome.
I've done so many art pieces based on that piece, just carnivorous wretchedness that I feel that it oozes in its own way, and yet when you think about it, he did the guy, the protagonist in the story was suffering of apathy, and yet what he did was the greatest act of selflessness that someone could do. And I think that in a lot of ways that was Billy on the inside was hurting and was a mess, and yet everything he did was for other people. He combated his own apathy by giving to others as much as he possibly could.
Hmm.
Even if that just meant making you feel good about you.
God damn. I'm sorry, Matt. I just wanted to come on and say that, and like I really enjoyed that. I'll let you guys get back to the show, but
thanks, dude. No, I always appreciate hearing what somebody else thinks about an author that I love.
Cool.
All right. So, Kat, we're going to go into you. Frankie Metro, do you want to stick around or?
Yeah. I mean, I'm just going to listen in and stuff like that, definitely.
All right,
so.
That's cool. That's cool.
Yeah.
We've got another caller, but I want Kat to read one of her poems and before I bring them on because, I mean, we can go into overtime for like 15 or 20 minutes, so it's not like a big deal. We're down to a half an hour, so we're really down. We can be down to 45 minutes.
Nobody wants to hear my voice for that long, homie. It's all good.
No, it's all good. I mean, we got another caller, but... Let's get into some of your poetry now and go from there. So whatever poem you want to read that's yours, go for it.
All right. Well, I'm going to read one called Why I Stopped Writing. Kind of, you know, about my father. So let's see what you guys think. My father can offer you a Bible study in 7 different languages. I often downplay this accomplishment by imagining that we are the same. I can tell you what's wrong with you in 3. I write like something I might conceive could equal or be of greater value than the sum of my years. I offer no solutions here, only fun ways of plagiarizing the common. Here, it is so easy to become a man, or the facsimile of a man, brutish and explicit, without the undertones and texture to validate such a stance. It is so easy to be clinical, so black and white, to dredge up the grotesque and pass it off as visionary, to parade the broken body of beauty naked and crumbling down the avenues it used to saunter in the interest of relatability. When the fathers of our fathers' fathers ran themselves through with their pens, opened their veins with their tongues, dissolved their hearts in awe of her. In jealousy I write, when the very reason I began was my inability to see eye to eye with one who could only look past the top of my head towards a horizon believed to be made of the things I've deemed unattainable and therefore ugly.
Wow. This, you've always been like one of my favorite writers in general. Always have been. I think I've probably told you that a bunch of times. I mean, ever since I probably knew you all the way back, but, I think that like another, you know how to read poems, and that's a great thing because there can be great writers that don't know how to read whatsoever, and it's just a very good thing to have that kind of a dual thing going on about you. And have you always been, besides that poem you started off with when you like realized it, have you always been interested in writing in general, or did it come after that time that you first read that poem when you were 16?
I think that I was looking for something. I was in search of a medium, just because I was so claustrophobic, and I always kind of been surrounded by books. And when I read that poem, I realized I could do this. I think I can do this. I don't know. I'm still shit. I still don't know if I can do this. But I felt like the way that he could explain how he felt with only half the people around him really knowing what the hell he was talking about seemed right up my alley. And I wrote for a long time before I ever let anyone that I really cared about read it. And it was a surprise to me the first time that I let someone, finally on MySpace, read my work and to have a positive reaction towards it, because it was something that I did more for myself. It's still something that I do more for myself than necessarily to have anyone read. So, I mean, have I always wanted to write? Yeah. Have I always wanted to read? No. Still not sure I want to read all that.
Yeah, I hear that. I'm not a big fan of the reading either. But then you told me this story once, and I don't know if this is recently or a long time ago, and I cannot say the guy's name, so I know who I'm talking about once I. But then there was the Russian that you found, what, in the back alleyway?
Yes.
Collection of poetry.
Oh, my God.
And what did that do for you?
Yuri Yevtushenko, man. That He messed me up. There was a bookstore in Long Beach, California, that isn't there anymore. It was in an old airplane hangar, and they just had stacks and stacks of books. I mean, they kept no inventory. They didn't know what the hell they had. And when books got too run down, they just kind of threw them out in the alley. And that's where I found my first Yevtushenko book. And it kind of blew my mind, because I love reading writers whose first language is not English, because I think there's an honesty that comes along with that translation. And being that English is my second language, too, I get it. But also, the same kind of thing. Someone that was raised in such an oppressive environment still being able to express themselves candidly, but to a limited audience, I found inspiring. Absolutely. I was so glad that day that I saw you post this stuff. I was like, no one ever knows who Yuri is.
Yeah, I got introduced to him within the last year, because April's a big fan, and there was just a big book sitting there, like a collected poems, like a billion pages, and I was like, well, looks like I'll be reading this. And I looked in it, and I was like, what the fuck? This guy is the shit. I think he's still alive, reading around places, too. I'm going to bring this person on. I don't know who it is, but hello, you're on the air.
Who am I on with?
Hello?
Excuse me? Yeah, who am I on with?
You were on with Capanitas, Aurora Kill Poet, and me, the host, Frank Reardon.
Yeah, this question, I have a two-part question for Aurora Kill Poet.
Okay.
Skull just came out with chocolate chip flavored bandits.
What is this?
Yeah,
I don't know.
the other part of that question. Was,
are you all right?
Hello?
Hello?
Yeah. That was the question.
I missed it.
No, man, the skull, you know, in the can came out with the chocolate chip bandits.
Frank, I think we need you to help me out here. I'm not sure I'm familiar with this gentleman.
This would probably be Tim Murray.
No. I'll tell you what happened to me. I'll tell you. Aurora Kippel, I read your work, things like that, and there's a lot of a big influence of Billy Collins in your lines, and I was just wondering, is that something that you consciously do, or, you know, like to pay your homage to Billy Collins, or is it like, you know, the influence, is it just something that you can't, you know?
Well,
that's an interesting question.
Could you answer that for me, or Kilpo?
I can honestly say that if there's an influence there, it's not intentional.
But
can we ever say we're not influenced by things around us? We can't.
Okay, so,
that time,
so,
what had happened to me, I fell off of it. I didn't know. It was just like one of those moments.
Well, all right.
Yesterday, I was out right.
Where'd he go? All right.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, I don't know who that was, actually. So, I don't know, but I don't understand Skull Black Bandits and, you know, but whatever. So, yeah.
It scares me a little bit. This is who I am.
Well, you got the link up, but there's in the original show link on Facebook, the page I have set up, I guess people just start adding people because I have a lot of people that listen to this show. I know that Frankie Metro has a show that he does sometimes, and last month alone we had 3,000 listeners or something crazy like that in archives and live. So anybody can, is listening to the show and stuff now. But, I don't like to normally cut anybody off, but, the questions are really kind of going nowhere, and I'm trying to conduct an interview. But anyways, sir, if you would like to call back and ask a question, go for it, but nobody chews Skull Black Bandits, I don't think. But anyway, so why don't you just go into another poem, because I was kind of thrown for a loop by that guy.
Yeah, no problem. Let's go on to The Unbearable Weight of Ceasing to Exist.
Okay.
All right. I remember her being funnier, less pedantic, more self-effacing in a cute way. There's this thing she does with her mouth now when she's talking to strangers about what she does for a living. So toothy. She pulls her hair over her shoulder and strokes it continuously the way I imagine she wishes a man was caressing her leg, or her mother's hands were sliding over hers. There's this thing about living alone, about not being touched unless you're fucking, how you can sneeze and nothing. And there's a danger swelling in the cavity of her chest where she's pushed aside vital organs to make room for happiness and inside jokes and knowing glances over dinner parties with young Republicans. It's a wound so deep, so wide, it will require packing, staples, and will leave a conversation piece she'll refuse to acknowledge even to herself. And we can say we die alone and together is only valid in certain contexts with certain people by our rules, and that this is a choice, and that it will be worth it the day he realizes we were waiting for him, that somehow full of nothing, we can be his everything just by being ourselves. And this is what empty feels like, and this is what uncertainty resembles, and here is where desperation lives, and yeast grows, and cobwebs form over our spontaneity, where our 20s sprout mythical wings and we lose our sense of humor.
Damn. There's so very few of your poems that I'm not blown away by. Gift with words, my friend. You have a gift with words. So, where is it that you want to? Is there any way that you want to take this, books or things like that, more books, or is it just something that you really like to just keep with yourself and share and occasionally publish or something? Or, I don't know. I've never really asked you that, so.
And it's funny because I had a feeling you were going to ask that, and I was trying to think of a good answer for you. The truth is, Frank, I write for myself. I write for my sanity. The goal of books and publication, maybe easy publication, as you said, things, for people that I admire, that I respect, presses that I really like, I might make an effort for that, but a whole book of myself just seems incredibly annoying. What I want to do, Frank, more than anything, is I want to make books. I want to make other people's books. I want to have the time that it takes and the resources that it takes to be a real publishing house, which is, I think, what Kill Poet could be if we had the time and the resources. And I think that's secretly, well, not even secretly between us, but it's what Jason and I hope for. We talk about all the time, the day that we have enough money to not live paycheck to paycheck, this is what we want to do. So as far as writing for me, it's really just a way for me to keep myself from killing people. But as far as writing goes, I am desperately and deeply in love with good writers and getting them known. It's what I really want.
That's a very noble thing to say, because I think that a lot of people, myself included at one time, but I think that a lot of people miss out on the point of what it actually is that in many ways it is for the self, and it is a way to, whatever, how you want to say it, splurge or whatever. I think that it's noble that you keep yourself wanting to do that and wanting to publish other people and get to that point. I mean, I think you guys could. I mean, I know that Razor, you know, I know that he works and has a job and he's gotten around to doing it, Punk Hostage over there. But I know it would probably take up your life if you worked and had a publishing house and weren't out about it. But maybe you can get into that at one point. Maybe if Jason is not, you know, I love the guy, but maybe if he's not in Hollywood all the time. If he's listening, I just want him to bust his balls anyways. I like to make fun of him for his flip-flops and his peach V-necks that he really doesn't wear. I just have an image of Hollywood.
I really think that Jason's Hollywood is going to be the ticket to Killpo's success, because eventually Jason's going to make infinitely more money than I do.
When he was posting how he might be, like, producing this show that could go well, I was like, oh, really? The first thing I typed was, so who's buying the drinks this time? So, no, I love the kid, and I think that if you guys were able to keep, because occasionally I'll ask him, so whatever happened became of Kill Poet, but I think you've given the more understandable answer to the audience than what I usually have to sift through many lines of Japanese to get to Jason's actual meaning of what happened to it.
That's because Jason talks like a writer. Jason is so profoundly poetry that his general conversation is cryptic. Part of what I love about him.
No, I love the kid too. I don't think there's many better than him. But back to you. So if anybody wanted to, anybody listening to the show that is hearing stuff that you're that is digging you, I mean, are you basically telling them that, you know, you gotta like find me at readings because you don't really like to publish other than the occasional thing?
Yeah, I mean, if someone hears something that they like at a read or here, they can always hit me up. And my work is out there, so if they want it, just let me know and take it. I mean, that's what Aletha did for Durable Goods. I just got into Durable Goods, and she knew that if she wanted something from me, she was just going to have to pass for me until I gave it to her. And, I mean, we take a similar approach with readers that we absolutely love and that don't submit. If we want them bad enough, we'll go after them.
That's almost like a very, even though you're completely different writers, it's almost like a completely Scott Wannenberg, I almost want to say Wannenbergian thing to do, is just like, you know, hit me up and here's a bunch of crap, you know, just here it is, here's my poetry, here's a piece of paper with a poem on it, here's a book with my poetry in it, and that's also a very noble thing to do, you know, because a lot of people get stuck on numbers.
That's probably the largest compliment you could ever pay any writer, dude. Just to call them Wannenbergian.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't know how else to put it because, like, you know, I think Will Crawford had said one time, he's like, said something like, that's very Wannenbergian of you. And I've ever since I've, like, said, like, you know, it's like a hard thing to, you know, he like in Kansas City, the one that you couldn't make it to, the second one, the day I met him, he was just handing out books, like, this brand new big hardcover books he put out, and he's just like, yeah. I'm like, so Scott, can I buy a book? He's like, just take it, and at the same time, he's like telling me a poem as I'm taking it away, and you know, and then like, he wrote me this poem on a piece of paper about calling me like the dancing leprechaun with Eugene O'Neill. I need to like put it in a frame. I don't know. Like he's like really like a really good guy, so yeah, I guess that's kind of Wannenberg-y of you. But anyway, so why don't you go into another one of your poems?
All right, let's see. Let's do. I think we're going to do Anthropomorphic.
Okay.
All right. Hold on, it's opening up. All right, Anthropomorphic. Designed to withstand the epitome of abuse, an iron jaw, rubber band spine, extremities bent to precise metric, slinky ribs and a methadone smile like I mean it, jointed double, triple, infinity beyond expectation, mass traverses counterclockwise to the stars, copper braid neurons, titanium fishnets of spinesh logic layered like phyllo dough to foe a mind, the replicator, the replicator, the replicator. of why, when, how, again. Fiber optic crochet of face, this face, my face. A clockwork heart, tick-tock, tick-tock. Wind me up by my ears and watch me go, watch me work, watch me fuck, watch me write, watch me appear to deliberate while you catch up. An anticipative comfort equation, manifest to catch bullets with my eyes, construct and melt and repurpose them to reinforce the lining of my stomach. PVC pipe folded over itself to maximize the flow of gravity. What can I do for you today, my love? How can I make your life easier? I live to serve your lack of ability, attention span, physical dexterity, emotional stability, more than casual awareness of what needs to be done, because it all does. This is why I was invented.
Damn, man. Just a excellent, excellent delivery. I'll say that again. Like, I don't really, like, I'm not really into that, you know. I'm more of a words kind of person, but you just, like, have a way of, I don't know, pronouncing the right words at the right time that really, like, caps you in the poem, and it makes me rethink my ideas of what a, you know, about reading a poem, because some poems are so good on paper, but they don't convey so well in readings, and vice versa. But
that's the really hard part. Like, for us, as you know, trying to put on shows and trying to put on reads, there are so many writers that we're just in love with, but it's got to translate, and that's hard. It's like, how do you tell a poet, "I love the way you write, but I can't stand the way you read"? No one should be told that ever.
Oh, yeah, but it's really hard going to a reading. Like, when I was going with you guys in San Francisco, I had to, like, sift through poem after poem to, like, decide if I could actually get away with reading it, you know?
Yeah.
Sometimes that's a hard thing to do, and sometimes you strike out, and sometimes it goes over well, but I don't know. That's just my two cents.
Well,
but,
I don't know,
so,
but I know that when
ahead.
I read... Oh, go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, I was done.
I was going to say, I know that when I read, I know Jason does this too, I'm sure people do this all the time. It doesn't matter how you've written out the poem, it's got to be restructured for the read.
Oh, yeah, sometimes I'll do that too, but not often. Like, I think there are times where, like in San Francisco, I get, like, so nauseous. I don't like reading on stage very much. I read them. I was in the house in Berkeley continuously, like, reading them in my head so I could get how they sound. I don't know.
What I love, and I will never probably do myself, but what I love is watching a good writer who has memorized their work and doesn't need any papers. It is so beautiful. Good writers.
I haven't seen many people do that. There was a few that I've seen do it. I've seen, like, Iris Applequist read some poems without the papers, and a couple others, but it's a very rare thing. I don't think I personally have ever remembered much of anything I've ever done, but that's just how I do it. But we all got our things. Why don't you give us another one?
All right. I'm going to put my cigarette. Hold on a second. Okay, here, we'll do an old one. Let's do Vegas backwards and heels. Before realizing she was alone, before the vomit, before she forgot to tip the cab driver, before she lost her shoes, before the lipstick and mascara made a purple bruise on the right side of her face, before the bra straps hung close to her elbows, when she still thought to keep her stomach in and her skirt below her panties, she promised to blow her husband, to call the sitter, to drink yards of neon liquids normally reserved for special occasions. She swore she wouldn't judge the bachelorettes and divorcees, the southern church girls with tiny vaginas and big breasts spilling out of the leopard print poly stretch tops, not to speculate on their handsy daddies or mommies who knit Christmas sweaters out of vodka and worship radio. Before the end of her so-called life, she was from North Dakota. She drunk cried in a marble bathroom. She reemphasized her awkward cleavage with black eyeshadow. She trained herself to walk in spike-heeled clear plastic platforms. She douched. She waxed her bikini line and refused to wince as the Vietnamese girl plucked the stragglers with hot pink tweezers and a smile. As a surprise, she shopped for lacy red lingerie. She booked a room. She tapped into their savings. She decided the kids were not enough of a reason for him to stay. She realized she was alone.
She's from North Dakota. Did I hear that?
Yeah, you did.
I think I've seen... Yeah, there are many. That's why I never leave my house. we stay here, and the funny thing is, like, it's a lot like Alabama, except for the temperature's different. Like, you know, and I've lived in some armpits. Like, you know, I've lived in Alabama and North Dakota, but I don't know. We'll be getting out of here hopefully sometime down the line soon, and not have to deal with those people. But
North Dakota, I think cold.
Yeah, it's,
Alabama,
there's a bunch of. Yeah, it's a bunch of snow on the ground right now. We had a snowstorm over the weekend and left us, but then it rained and now it's kind of going away. So I guess it's that time of year. You guys don't really get snow, but I guess it's that time of year. It's November, so now I've got to deal with it.
Yeah.
So
our November
anyway,
is like
so,
80 right now.
Yeah, man. I wish I could afford that kind of paradise, but I just can't. You know,
yeah,
that's like it's. I want to die every time I go on a Craigslist and check out prices in California. I'm like, why? And every time I figure I can afford one, it's in the middle of nowhere, California, where there's no jobs. So.
Yeah, but the weather's fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, if I want to live in a tent and eat out of the garbage dump, I suppose, I guess I could do it.
Well,
no,
if you're
going to
live
like,
in a tent with California, right?
Yeah, yeah. I love Northern California. I really do. I'm not too, like, I grew up in a city, but I'm not that much of a city boy anymore, so, but whatever. So, anyway, so you, has California, like, you used to be in, used to live in Los Angeles, correct?
Yeah.
Do you miss Los Angeles, or are you pretty much, like, settled where you are now?
You know, I miss Southern California so much. There are things about Northern California that I love. I love the people here, a little bit more genuine. Not everyone's trying to be an actress, so that's kind of nice. I love the food here. But I miss having a history somewhere, which I had in L.A. I miss knowing where the fuck I am all the time.
Yes.
Obviously, I miss my friends. I miss Jason. Made some awesome friends up here, met amazing people, but I do miss Southern California. I don't know if I'll ever move back there, but I miss it.
You said the thing that I think is most important, and is the history, because as my cousin always tell me, you can take the boy out of Boston, but you can never take the Boston out of the boy. And we're a bunch of sarcastic, crude, loudmouth Irish people for the most part out in that way. And it doesn't float over too well in North Dakota and California and everywhere else. So I understand that sense of history, and I always cringe at the thought of moving back to New England, but it's such a part of me that I've seen the rest of the country, and I don't feel very comfortable anywhere else as I do in that part of the world. But anyway, so... If I just want to go over the whole, so you have no plans. I mean, we talked about Kill Poet a lot, but and you have the aspirations and the dreams about it, but is it like completely in standstill at the moment, just kind of not doing anything?
Well, at the moment, we're sitting on an issue that's pretty much complete. I mean... So, okay, so you remember Offbeat Pulp. You remember the boys in Offbeat Pulp. You remember Richard Daley, and you remember Michael.
Oh, of course, yep.
Yeah. So when Billy passed, Michael, Taji, he started doing Arc Coding for us. He's been an absolute delight to work with. He had a baby, which now is several months old, so I really have no excuse for not having this issue out. So he did most of our coding before and then after the baby was born, and so now it's just a matter of us finishing up. You know, for every one of our issues, we like to have a featured artist, and it's been a little bit more difficult to come by an artist of the caliber that we're looking for. So I would say that if there's anyone listening right now that has artwork that they'd like to submit for 10, that's what's missing to get 10 out.
Oh, okay. So is this going to be like a yearly thing or quarterly thing or just whenever the hell you can do it kind of thing?
Well, our goal was a quarterly thing. It was actually called Drawn in Quarters. That was our quarterly thing. But the truth is, with as much as Jason works and as much as I work, quarterly might be a little ambitious. We want to do at least twice a year, and if we're able to do more often than that, then we will. What we started doing for a while was doing a print issue along with our online issue, because, you know, as much as the internets are fun, we all like to see our work on paper. So that taps into a different set of resources. So we'd like to be able to continue to do that. So if that means that we have to put out fewer issues a year, but we can continue to provide that service, then that's what we want to be able to do.
Right on, man. That's cool. It's cool to hear that because, like I said earlier, every so often I hear Jason just like, you know, talking about the mathematics of Vonnegut and in the middle of the sentence says, Kill Poet, mathematics of Vonnegut. Like, again, like I'm like, wait, I have to connect the dots through this long email of Kill Poet in this sentence, issue in this sentence. Like, so it's a little bit harder. I hear you out there, Jason. I love you. You know, but yeah, it's just like there's just so many coming out, and there's like so many like the claim this is the cutting edge, and this is this or that, and I like a good deal of them. I do. I'm not here to shit on anybody's hard elbow grease, but there's something about Kill Poet that's just been around for a long time. It'll be really good to have it back.
And I think that that's part of what makes us hold off, too. I mean, we've had times where we had, you know, many, many submissions, and it just didn't feel right. And I think that what has given us the credibility that we have and that will give us the staying power is if we don't compromise. If we don't compromise, then there's no cronyism. So those are the two biggest things for Jason and I. I mean, Jason and I will publish ourselves. That was the first rule when we got together was we would not publish ourselves anymore. So the intent is there, and we know that we have the ability to do this, and we have amazing fans. I mean, people that read Kill Poet are the people that we want to publish. They're the people that we want to read. So if they can be patient with us for just a bit longer.
Will there ever be another infamous Kill Poet reading?
Actually, we've been talking about possibly doing one in December. You know, I think the days of you know, mass Woodstock suicide are done for us. We're just too fucking old. it's just too much. But as far as still putting on really good shows, we still, you know, we have a home base, Molly Malone's in L.A., that is welcome to have us whenever we want. And so we've been talking about doing one in December. Might end up being January. Are you familiar with Hannah Weir?
What's that? Am I familiar,
are you familiar with
her? Yeah, I know her pretty well.
Okay, so
yeah, you do.
You know Hannah. So, you know, Hannah's up here by me, and we've been talking about putting a read together early December. You know, Hannah works for, she works in juvenile hall. She's an English teacher, and they put on shows a few times a year, and that's getting to be a little expensive because she has to fund most of that herself. So we're helping to do a charity event for her kids, as well as a read, and we put together our dream team, our list of readers that we want on the back of a cocktail napkin the other night. So people should be prepared because we're about ready to guilt half of the people we know to come out and do a read for us. But, I mean, that may be the new iteration of what Kill Poet does is, you know, a little bit of North Bay, a little bit of Southern California.
Yeah.
But the truth is, the poetry scene in Northern California, I mean, I wasn't really feeling the San Francisco scene when I moved up. I went to a few reads, and it's just a different vibe. But getting to know the Oakland folks, like Paul and Missy and Razor, obviously, that it's beautiful. It's beautiful, and it's clean, and it's pure, and it's for the love of the craft, and definitely something that we would want to tap into at Kill Poet.
Yeah, that whole Oakland thing was one of the better events, and I really wish you guys came out to read at Jack London's Horror House, because that was one of the best readings I've ever been to, ever been a part of. Like, but the one on the tattoo parlor, that was fucking fantastic too, and that whole atmosphere was definitely over the top excellent. That whole week was, I mean,
one of the best reads I've been to.
Yeah, Bill Gaynor dropped it, man. He's really great. Uh-huh. And I don't think there was a bad reading at the tattoo parlor. There wasn't at Jack London's Whorehouse. There wasn't any of the nights, really. But, I mean, those two nights to me, to be involved with those two nights were just an amazing thing to be part of. That last day was great, too. But I think that everybody was so burnt out after a week of, like, drinking and good times that everybody was kind of tired. We were all tired. Like, I was tired. I was forgetting pages of poems that I was reading. Like, I was like, I'm burnt. I'm sorry, guys. I'm done. Like, so it was so hard. Plus, you had, like, Stabbing Westward or whatever that band was that was, like, setting up behind us.
This is the weirdest thing that we opened up for them. That was the weirdest thing ever. It was awesome. It was weird.
Yeah, it was. I don't know. It was a good time, but to, like, that last day when everybody's, like, tired and screwing up and things like that, that's the kind of stuff that makes it memorable, like, you know, and I wish I got to see, like, you guys more, and I think I only got to see Hannah for all of, like, 5 minutes, like, you know, so I was wishing to see people more than I did, but, you know, I saw a lot of other cool people a lot, too. But
I think that's
No, I was done.
I think that overwhelmingly is what this scene has given me over the years, is not just the confidence that I can express myself in a way that's relevant to people, but I've met some amazing human beings that have completely changed my life and that I wish lived closer. That's the hardest part, is meeting people that you fall in love with and then they live so far away.
Yeah, that's how it was. Like, and I've never... I said that, like, once that I started to know these people, that I would never become part of a one group or one clique or one type of, you know, I've always enjoyed hopping on a train and reading with East Coast folks and then doing the same in West Coast, and I always enjoyed being able to find the different types of people that moved me, you know, whether they were, you know, a Kowski kind of lineage or a James Wright kind of lineage. Like, that stuff never mattered to me. It's what someone's putting down that really, like, matters to me. Like, you know, and like, meeting people like you and having you on this show is, like, things that matter to me, you know.
Well, thanks for having me, Frank.
It was great having you, you know. We are now down to the end. So do you want to take us out with a poem?
Sure.
Do one last one. I'll do Cerebral Thrombosis. Sometime in late spring, winter, fall, summer, but earlier than I realized, I succeeded in convincing you I wanted nothing but your happiness. Silly boy, man, woman, girl, this is my skill, my life's work. This is intent. This is trap. This is game. Don't you know? Isn't everyone, but above all else, I want to be free, to love you uncontrollably, assault you with joy, smother you with support like you never. I want to lock you in a mystery, my smile its only key, papoose you in magic blankets woven from my fingers, make you feel beautiful. I want to neglect self-preservation, I want to submit to your care, lay my reins at your feet and find you a benevolent master. This is my expectation of everything, of everyone, that if and when I give, because I am not made of glass, you will give, because I've made you soft. Force me to protect myself, and I will take myself away, cage my affections and redirect my energy, change the fucking course of rivers. I will punish us with absence and quiet, because you should know what you do not. Clearly you do not. A balance exists. A perfect angle where the seesaw rests horizontal. It's the clitoris of concentric circles nestled between gas and clutch. But this is not who you know I am. My fingers are too thick, my mind too tangled in ratios, my powers of perception fixed on fanciful delusions of generosity, selflessness, lack of ego, unending self-affirmations of I tried, I did, I did, I did. But they say acknowledgement is the first step towards recovery.
Wow. Always so good, man. Really great to have you on. Thanks for taking time out to come on and read some of your great work.
Thank
I'm
you.
Sure I'll be... I don't know if I can definitely make it next month. That's less than a month away, and it's the holidays, but definitely count me in for other stuff after the holidays, you know? I'll definitely...
Absolutely. We're looking at December 8th for the Win of Hero with Hannah and I, and then we're looking at sometime in January for the Kill Poet Read down the mall.
Yeah, just if you guys actually get that together in January, just shout out and, you know, see what we can do.
Yes, sir.
But until then, don't be a stranger.
I'm sure we'll be talking tomorrow.
All right, then. Have a good one.
All right, you too. Thanks, Frank.
All right. Okay, that was Aurora Kill Poet, Kat Benitez. Awesome to have on the show tonight. Our next show is going to be on Thursday at 10 Eastern, 7 Pacific. It's a remake for Make to Eat. I was ill last week and I couldn't perform the show. So just tune in on Thursday. There'll be a link. And thank you. What the fuck ever.